in all honesty, going from zero sessions to like a 15 to 30 minute session is very powerful. It could be some bodyweight movements. Some of my favorite bodyweight movements to start with are squats and push-ups and lunges and burpees.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who used to watch videos of Wentworth Miller for hours on end, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me for the Running for Real podcast. Whether you are a new fan, someone who's come from Run to the Top, whether you've never listened to a podcast before, wherever you've come from, it's great to have you, and I look forward to connecting with you in the future. I want to firstly give a big shout out to everyone who has shared the podcast with running groups, Facebook groups, on social media, with anyone you can think of. Thank you so much for that. It really means a lot, and it really helps me to get out there, which is so great to just climb up that ranking, which I really hope to do pretty quickly. I want to send another big shout out to anyone who has left me a rating or review. And remember, you can actually enter to win one of 5 training programs for either a full or a half marathon that my husband and coach Steve created. So you can hear more about that after the interview. Last week, we talked to Neely Spence Gracie, who's a 69-minute half marathoner who, despite being smoking fast, was really, well, I guess, real with us. And she shared how she made it through 2 years of just nonstop battles. And I remember Neely going through this, and it really was a tough time for her. It just seemed like she was getting one thing after the next and just couldn't get a break. And she also got Lyme's disease, so that definitely didn't make it any easier. But she did come back stronger, and it's been great to see her do well since then. So you'll want to go back and check her story out if you didn't already listen to it. Today we have Nate Helming, who's the co-founder of The Run Experience. And the Run Experience has kind of snowballed into this giant community, which has been so cool to see. And Nate has put in so much hard work, so it's great to see it pay off. Now, you're going to learn pretty quickly that Nate is a lot of fun, and the two of us kind of like to mess around. But I'm hoping that it gets you smiling from ear to ear while you're running, doing chores, driving, whatever you're doing right now. So before I go on too much, I'm going to just introduce you to Nate, and let's do it. Hello, Nate. Thank you so much for joining me on the Running for Real podcast. How are you doing today?
Tina, I'm doing pretty good.
That's doing pretty good. Thanks for a minute.
Well, you know, I was just looking outside and I was like, I'm doing wonderful, but I don't know if I wanted to like start off that hard and you know, just kind of ease in. It's the morning as we sort of go. I've been up for a couple hours. It's going to be a beautiful day.
I thought for a minute you were going to say, oh, well, you know, it's not very sunny outside. And I was going to give you my like little violin there, because where you live, it's pretty amazing year round from what I get of it.
You know, we do get a little sad around here if we see a cloud in the sky and it dips below 65 degrees. Just one. That's all it takes, you know.
Yeah, you got your jacket on whenever it's under 70, right?
Oh, my gosh.
You guys,
I know, I'm soft. I grew up in New England, and I had my hardcore running stories of, you know, running along the Charles River in Boston with like 25 mile an hour winds and 15 degree temperatures, and my knuckles would be all dry and cracked from all the dry air, and I would have like the smoker's cough from just inhaling car fumes. Now I'm very soft. I would not do that again.
I think it's worth it. If you can live in California, why not? Love to live there. So let's start, Nate. Let's begin with a fun fact about you to kind of get people to pay attention to who you are here.
So I am someone who, in addition to loving running, I really like to dance.
Ooh, like Just Dance dance, or are we talking like
some specifically
salsa?
Like I really like music, and I actually, like a couple years ago when I was coming out of this like swing of like really high competition for me, I still had this like kind of itch to sort of fill that void to like learn new stuff. So I actually started breakdancing.
Wow.
And I did it for like 2 years. Yeah.
That is interesting.
I would meet my good friend, Carl Paoli, who's another amazing strength coach, and he has a gymnastics background, and he started messing around with this, you know, in the gym where I work at San Francisco CrossFit one morning. And I was like, what is that? This is way cooler than the normal warmups we do. And we pulled some gymnastics mats out and we just started messing around. And then the next week he started doing some different moves. And I was like, wait a minute, you're like as white as I am. Like, where are you learning these things? And he was like, oh, Miles. And I'm like, well, who's Miles? And he's like, well, Miles is this break dancer. And I meet him on Friday mornings. And, you know, basically we do lessons. And I was like, can I come? Like, I was so excited. So basically for 2 years, I was meeting Miles and Carl, and we were breakdancing on Friday mornings in San Francisco. That's so
cool. Can you send us a video that I can put in the show notes? Do you have any evidence of this?
I might be able to dig up a video.
Oh,
at least
you have videos. Come on, don't play with me here. I know you have some videos. So we'll have a video in the show notes at tinamuller.com/episode6.
You can just follow me, Nate B-Boy Life, on Instagram.
Is that real?
No.
That would be funny if it was. All right. So let's find out a little bit more about the serious side of you. So tell us about who you are, your running background. And then if you want to go on to run experience, you can do that. Or if you talk for 20 minutes, I might interrupt and restart that question again.
We can do that. So somewhere between 20 minutes and like 30 seconds, that's like the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Okay. We can do that. So I, as I was saying earlier, grew up in New England. I was just like kind of a prep school kid, played a bunch of different sports that were just kind of available through school, right? So I was like soccer, believe it or not, we had like a downhill ski team. So I did that in high school, played a little lacrosse, although I was terrified of getting hit. So I didn't like that sport very much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually kind of got bored with those sports and got more into really two things, running and then sailing. I actually sailed collegiately in college at Boston College for a year or two. That was sort of my big focus sport for a long time. And I remember actually when I was running earlier on, I was always running through for soccer, and I had this little route outside my house. It took me like 12 minutes and I was like done. I just was like, I was so wasted after that 12 minutes. I just couldn't go a step further. And that was sort of like my little like warm up for like soccer tryouts and for practice and everything else. And I remember I showed up the first day for cross country, and they said, we're meeting on the Charles River. It's this beautiful early fall day in Boston. It's kind of like the one couple weeks of weather in Boston that's basically like California for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to run for, you know, a staggering 55 minutes. And I think my jaw like hit the ground, and I was like, I can barely make 12 minutes. How am I going to go 55? And so I'm kind of getting ready to go. And then just people just sort of like start off so slow and it's just so casual and people are chatting. And it was the first time that running was like this enjoyable experience and not this like suffer fest I had to prepare for soccer. And I'm like, this is amazing. You're allowed to run slow? I didn't know that. And I think from there, I was sort of hooked. I really liked it. I enjoyed it through sailing. I did it a little bit on off. And what really kind of flipped the switch for me was I got an opportunity to run my first marathon my sophomore year in college. I was like 19, 20 years old. And I got to run the Boston Marathon.
Oh, wow.
And I got to do not it bad. as a charity bib. And to be clear, like I was 19 or 20. Marathons weren't really on my radar. I didn't know that you had to qualify for Boston. Like that didn't matter to me. Like it was, yeah, sure, I'll do this. And trained with this group of students. We had this like super hardcore winter year of training. It was really fun. Of course, it was the last year that they did the noon starts. This was in 2004. For any listeners out there who were out in the starting line that year too. And of course, it was like 85, 90 degrees.
Oh my God.
So Tina, I remember January was like 5 degrees. February was like 6. March, maybe I was sweating visibly when I was running outside, but not by much. And then all of a sudden, like race day was like 85, 90 degrees, started noon. So it was a rough transition, but I loved it. And then I just kind of kept going. I ran.
Kept going after the finish line.
I made it to the finish line. loved it. I had a bunch of drunken roommates cheering me on right at mile 20 as they should. I was always that person in previous years cheering the Boston because it's a party.
Yeah.
You know, you go out and watch the Boston. It's such a special thing. in New England, it's like the first event that's outside. Mm-hmm. People love it. So that really kind of anchored this thing for me. I ran my first ultra marathon the year after Tina.
Wow.
By mistake. Okay. I signed up, and I'll just throw the name out and you'll understand. So I signed up, I was traveling abroad, and I lived in Switzerland and South Africa. And for South Africa, I wanted to do another marathon. And I was like, oh, the Two Oceans Marathon. That sounds like a wonderful thing to do. And of course, you're laughing a little bit because you're like, you silly boy, that's not a marathon. It's a little longer. And so I signed up, I printed off my registration, and I'm looking at this. And once again, this is within my first year marathoning. I'm not really familiar with kilometers other than I know that a 5K is like 3.1 miles because that's what I did in high school. Mm-hmm. And I see this thing and it's like 56 kilometers. And I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. That sounds a little different. So like I'm straight up in Google Translate and I'm like, I just signed up for a 35 mile race.
So wait, what point is this you realized? Are you already there at the race or are you?
No. This was like 10 minutes after hitting the register button.
Okay.
So I had some time to prepare and I was like, that's 10 miles further than I've ever gone. But I was down and mm-hmm. trained and had a great time and got out to California and got more into triathlon, into Ironman. And, you know, it's funny, what kind of pertinent to some of our conversations for today, I actually became an accidental triathlete because, you know, lo and behold, doing three marathons and one ultra within your first year of serious running will beat you up a little bit.
Yeah.
And all these things make sense backwards, Tina. And the way in which I was training at the time, I started to like bike more and swim more. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, man, I might as well do a triathlon. And I kind of got down that road a little bit. And then from there, I got into coaching and strength and conditioning because I was getting beat up so much. And I wanted mm-hmm. to learn more about the body. And then I realized I'm not the only one. Other people get beat up too. Maybe there's something here.
And so is that where the run experience came from? Because you kind of felt like beaten up yourself and you started exploring and thought, you know, I want to share what I'm learning with others. Or how did the run experience come about? And maybe tell us what it is first for people who don't know.
Sure. So the Run Experience is a company that I co-founded with my partner, Craig Dos Santos. And right now we're about a team of 10. We have a coach, fantastic running and strength coach who works remotely in Colorado named Kirk Warner. We have Dr. Kyle Bowling, who we both know, who's
yes.
recently signed up with
Love
us, who's
Kyle.
our resident sports chiropractor. We have Elizabeth Inpine, who's a fantastic nutritionist and sports nutritionist. And she works with some of the who's who in the triathlon world and running world. So we're super psyched to have her on board, as well as a gal, Holly Martin, locally in San Francisco, who's really trained with Craig and I a lot more. And she's pretty awesome. Last year, you know, as a woman, she back squatted, I think like 255 pounds
wow.
and then ran the North Face 50K a couple weeks later. And wow. We're not going on a thing making sure everyone does this. She's also a professional dancer. She's just incredible. Like she just does all these incredible things. So we have this really cool team and we are putting out three, and it might be even more YouTube videos a week on our YouTube channel. And we offer like run strength and injury prevention coaching for runners all over, you know, beginner to expert. And we have a few different programs that people can sign up for. And the biggest thing we try to do is sort of give life to that spreadsheet rather than, you know, say run 3 miles today, cross train with an X tomorrow. You're like, well, what is that? Is that everything? Is that yoga? Is that Tai Chi? Is that TRX? And what we try to do is give a little bit more color and description there. And we put in videos like, hey, this is how we should warm up. These are some of the exact, you know, exercises we should be doing. And yeah, we've got this crazy community online and it's so awesome. I mean, it's like pretty much my whole life right now.
Yeah, no. And it's been amazing to watch it grow. I mean, you've grown it. You've got 82,000 fans on Facebook, which is incredible. And did you ever kind of expect it would take off the way that it has?
You know, I think we've treated growing this business like training for a race, you know, kind of like you have to like dream for not the impossible, but what's the edge of what you think you can do. and try to sort of plan to get there. And sometimes what's funny, and I know a lot of runners experience this, if no one signs up for a race and they don't have anything on the calendar, they're probably not questioning their fitness too much, right? But as soon as a race is on the calendar, you're like, shit, I should have started yesterday. Yeah. It's like, I'm behind, you know? And sometimes that's not good, because if we go too fast and our, you know, expectations are unreasonable. But when you sort of set that in business, you're like, oh man, I got to get my butt moving. I'm behind from yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so we've just sort of had our heads down plugging away. And when we look up, we hit these numbers, you're like, it's amazing, but also we're like, oh yeah, we earned this. Mm-hmm. You know, we planned for this. We built for this.
Yeah.
You know?
I love the correlation there. Like you said, it is like training for a race, and it's great that it, you know, you have reached that point where you've achieved one of your goals, which is awesome. And I do want to mention, we both, when you were mentioning your team, you did say about Dr. Kyle Bowling. And I kind of said, oh yeah, you know, I love Kyle. And I just wanted to say, for anyone listening who might not be sure what we're talking about here, Kyle has joined Nate's team, you know, working with the Run Experience. But Kyle is actually the guy, when I talked about dry needling and how I got my peroneal tendonitis that had been bothering me for years to go away, Kyle was the guy that made it go away. So
amazing.
If anyone's in Louisville, so many different ways of saying it, and in Kentucky or anywhere near, then make sure you go see him. But all right, yeah. So overall, the Run Experience, you've kind of told us a bit of a rundown about it. One of the things I see on your website, which I think is such a good summary for it, is about teaching your body to remember how to move. So maybe you could explain what that means for people who are still kind of a little bit confused.
Running is this, you know, vehicle we use for physical training to make ourselves better physically, or a little social outlet, you know, to train or have a shared experience with other people online. Hey, you're a runner. I'm a runner. I know what 26.2 means. Maybe not everyone does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it pushes us mentally as well. It kind of pushes us mentally in both directions, from this is a time to have a little bit of a digital detox. I'm not staring at my screen while I run, hopefully, you know, I get to unplug a little bit, get a little nature and a little oxygen. And then also to go to places that I don't think I could go, whether that's distances, pain levels, discomfort, or whatever. For me, running is just one of those more ultimate expressions of being an athlete, how my body should be able to move just in general, right? So I could scratch those three itches breakdancing, right? Or doing anything else. You know, our chosen vehicle is running. And it's such a great gateway drug to being an athlete, because it kind of gets us into our bodies. The first time I really ever considered myself an athlete was called myself a runner. Like, that's such a powerful identity when people say, hey, I'm a runner. It's almost like I'm a runner, I can do more.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of what it means. But what's also interesting when we think about the identity is that as it is expansive as it is on one end, when you become more competitive, the identity becomes a little bit more limiting. I'm a runner, so my coach would probably be mad if I went skiing this weekend, so yeah, close to my big race, right? I'm a runner, so you know, I'm not gonna try and help you move your couch upstairs because I just doesn't feel that good on my back, you know. Like, I'm a runner, so I'm not gonna do other things, right? It's the door swings both ways, and what I like to try to remind people is that we're not just runners, we're athletes.
Yes.
And if we can improve our athletic foundation and basically be open to doing things that athletes do, it's going to enrich our life in all directions. And it's also going to make us better runners.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true. I love that. And I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, Drew, my strength coach, is always saying the same thing. Like, do you want to be a runner or do you want to be an all-round athlete? And I actually wrote about this on my blog at one point. I will put a link in the show notes to that, because it's such an important topic. And then, so what about if people say, okay, well, you know, I don't have time to be an athlete. This is too much work to do all this extra stuff. What would you like to say to them?
So I can answer this two ways. I'll answer the big way first, and then I'll give more practical tips to sneak this stuff in, because when people think about strength training, they think about driving across their town, parking, going into a locker room, you know, going into this gym, paying a gym membership, dealing with funny equipment are weighed and mm-hmm. someone sweat on this seed and it's gross. And then you have to sit there. You know what I mean? There's like a lot of, they're playing terrible music, some satellite radio station. Like what is this? And it doesn't have to be that at all, right? There are things that you can actually add into your runs that you can sneak a little bit of strength and mobility sessions in there. But the one thing I would say was that let's look at how many people get hurt running.
Yeah.
Right. Are just dealing with injuries in general. And I'm not necessarily going to blame running. I'm kind of going to blame like sort of lack of athleticism, right? Like we are a culture these days that just sit and stand. That's all we do, right? Mm-hmm. We don't do that much. And running's good. It's a step in the right direction, but I'm just sort of moving in very limited range of motion and in very limited way. Like I need a little bit more. When we talk about running, you're like, well, I don't have a lot of time and I need to focus all my energy on running and on running more. The one thing I like to say is that you need to run a lot to be a good runner. Don't confuse my words in thinking that you can, you know, burpee your way to a Boston qualifying time.
That right? would be impressive, though.
That would be impressive, right? You need to run a lot to do it. Yeah. But here's the thing, right? Like high mileage, it's a privilege you have to earn. It's not a right that you just go ahead and get to do. Similar to if you're in the gym and you want to squat that heavier barbell or do something more difficult or technical, you have to earn that privilege to be able to do it. You have to do all the work. You have to do all the preparation. You have to experience some of the smaller lumps along the way and really realize the bigger risks that you take on so you can have these bigger payouts. Right. And let's be super honest with ourselves. If we're trying to do track and tempo sessions, longer runs, add more runs into our week, which are necessary to be good runners, they're necessary because they have that high payout. But what's the other side of the coin of the high payout? Right. Greater levels of risk. Mm-hmm. Right. So we need to be aware of that. And the more we're pushing in that higher mileage world, the more we need to mitigate those risks and to honor that athletic base.
Yeah.
In terms of practical tips and movement things, I'm happy to jump in there a little bit. But there are things that we can do within our run workouts at home, all body weight stuff. I mean, Tina, I'm not sure how much you're strength training, but I would be surprised if it was probably more than 2 or 3 days a week.
Yeah, no, twice a week. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, twice a week, and you can get a lot done in 2 days a week and still get all your running in. So it's like the bar, our standards have been so low. I'm not even asking to raise it that high. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's like I'm saying, hey, guys, let's go from no push-ups to like push-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. So then maybe explain a bit about that. Like you mentioned, you know, it could be twice a week. Is that twice a week of an hour? Like that's what I typically do is 2 by an hour of strength training. But are you saying these are lots of little ones or what do you usually do?
Yeah. So I like to answer this in a few different ways from the broader spectrum. And for you listeners out there who are busy and you're feeling a little overwhelmed in general, and you can't fathom taking on something else, mm-hmm. in all honesty, going from 0 sessions to like a 15 to 30 minute session is very powerful. And, you know, it could be some bodyweight movements. Some of my favorite bodyweight movements to start with are squats and push-ups and lunges and burpees. And if I can kind of hit those 4 movements, I can actually get and address a lot of general positions that I need to master just with my body and how to be strong from developing greater hip, knee, and ankle range of motion in the squat, being able to control it when I go a little bit deeper, improving my extension of my hip and say a lunge, which is important for running, being able to balance and stabilize more on one foot. You know, that lunge looks a little bit more running-like. Push-ups are a fantastic tool to improve our posture and our shoulder position. If I kind of slump forward and my shoulders round in, my arms are going to start to swing across my body. Literally, when I slump over, my rib cage collapses a little bit and I can't even get a full breath of air in anymore, right? So I'm literally running with the parking brake on. Like that doesn't work well. So I think it's reasonable to give ourselves some basic tools to prime our ability to run more upright, right? Yeah. And sometimes the analogy I give is, you know, if you fly, even in a short flight, but especially a cross-country flight, like you might start upright in the beginning, but what happens after about 30 minutes or so, right? kind of settle in, you find a nook, an hour and a half later, you've like finished a movie, you're a little lower. And then maybe 2 hours later, your head is like lolling backwards and drooling on the gentleman next to you. And then you wake up and you start moving and it's like, you feel terrible mm-hmm. when you start moving, right? It's just, it's not good. So I like to think about it as like, if that sort of almost like decay in movement happens throughout your day, what do you think happens in your run?
Yeah, so true.
You know, like there's that opportunity for that decay to go out. So when we start asking questions, like I like to be more on the philosophical side, like how strong do we need to be as runners, right? Do we need to bench press 500 pounds? Like maybe not, right? Mm-hmm. Do we need to back squat 300 pounds? Like probably no, right? But maybe there's something about doing some of these movements and you don't have to load them up. There is value of loading them up for sure, as you can experience. And I know you're like doing sled stuff or you've done sled stuff, which is pretty mm-hmm. awesome. But maybe there's something in that that translates to me being able to hold my body upright for a little bit longer periods when I'm running.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And yeah, like you mentioned, it is good to do the heavyweight stuff if you can and you have access to a coach and everything. But I think what Nate is saying is that, you know, a lot of these things aren't rocket science. It's better to do this stuff than to do nothing at all. And, you know, it's a great starting point and anyone can do it. And, you know, I've had a few people on to talk about this because it is so important. And Nate is someone who really it does have the right idea here. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot of people that come to you are like first time runners. So this isn't something that, you know, you have to have been running a certain amount of time. And as you mentioned, which I love that you said earlier, that, you know, high mileage is a privilege and you have to kind of earn your right to be there. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And you kind of said a lot of great points there about how important this is and just how important is form when you come to this. Because if I think of, okay, you know, doing push-ups, let's say, oh, I want to do push-ups, but then I'm doing it all wrong and my back is all arched in and, you know, I'm just using my head to go up and down. Like, tell us about form and, you know, how important this is to find someone to teach you to do it correctly.
Sure. So this is one thing that had a very profound impact on me. You know, a lot of times when we sort of hear like good form in the gym for this arbitrary movement, you're like, well, what is that? Mm-hmm. Like, what is good form? What does that mean? Does it mean that you aesthetically look good? Does it mean that you're sort of following the directions on the machine? Like, what are the standards of good form? Like, this should be, you know, mechanically optimal, right? My body is moving mechanically in the best way. The shoulder is producing force as it should, or my hip is stable and producing force through the ground as it should, without any loss of power and without any excessive wear and tear, you know, something like that. And when we start talking about form, we want to think about as a general technique rule that what's safe is always what's most powerful. I never have to trade, never. And that's really, really important. And when we start to go towards those max efforts, our body can start to twist into certain positions, but that's always not what's optimal, right? So it's, we sort of know that what's really good is what's really good. Mm-hmm. Now, I bring athletes in the gym and I've worked with, you know, different athletes from cyclists and Olympic level cyclists to beginner runners to some guys who are pretty big in the CrossFit world, downhill skiers. What I kind of have, you know, seen different people over the years. And a lot of times you always hear this as, well, I want the strength work that's specific to me, right? I want the runner's specific workout. And from what I can gather, there's really no difference between a soccer squat versus mm-hmm. a skier squat versus that. It's we're all human beings. We have the same hips, knees, and ankles, shoulders, elbows, and wrists, and everything. And our body's going to move as it should. All the specificity comes within the direct application of your sport. But when you're in the gym, I could maybe talk about those movements in a way that's going to relate to your sport. So you kind of make those mental connections, but the principles of your hip and your shoulder and everything else, it's going to be the same. I'm kind of saying this in a slightly long-winded way so that you guys know that form is not an arbitrary thing. And if you sort of learn the master rules of posture and how to protect and stabilize your spine and really how to load up the major power generators, your body, your hips and your shoulders, you literally have a tool set to do everything. Hmm. Like what was cool was that when I was breakdancing and I was talking to the breakdance teacher about performance and these things, I saw the same principles of movement being applied here with a different language, right? When you go into a yoga class, they have you do, you know, sun salutations and chaturanga in a certain way, right?
Yep.
They're not dumb, right? Like it's like they figured that over thousands of years, like maybe this is how the shoulder should move, right? When like those elbows are in by your side, that kind of looks like your arm swing when you stand up tall, right? As a runner, right? We could generally say we'd want to see our arms swinging more in a north-south direction than an east-west across our body, right? So when we're talking about form in general, there are these general principles that we can all see. And what's cool is that when we look at the aesthetics, we can tell when someone is tired.
Yeah.
Think about that. In just every little demeanor, we pick up so much information, right? We can tell when they're sagging a little bit. We can certainly tell running out. That's why we try to be stoic, which is another way cue for us to be more upright and to run a little bit better and think on technique that respect. But we can tell when things look good, when they don't look good. And I guess what I'm telling you is to sort of trust that if something looks a little weird, it's weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's off. Something is not right. So when we get into sort of the specifics of this, you know, one of the great places to start, and the reason why I start with a squat and push up is just the ability to stand upright, to squeeze your butt and push your hips forward. Because when you do that, that get your hips underneath you. Sometimes there are certain trainers and technicians that will talk about the level of your pelvis and whether to tuck it in or out. And sometimes that's hard for people to visualize. So literally, if you just squeeze your butt, that gets your pelvis pretty darn neutral right underneath you, right? So it's sort of like the swipe your iPhone test. I don't need to know all the technology underneath. I just swipe the phone. I know how to work the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we build up from there, how to stabilize our shoulders, how to stand, how to initiate a squat. And there's a little subtlety to them. But once you sort of learn these master rules, the trick is then learning how to apply it to everything else. And if you apply it to everything else, you're like, oh, I know good form because I know these three things.
Yeah. Yep, so important. And you've done a great job with the videos that you have and just the way that you've got this across to your audience. And, you know, I'm hoping you guys listening will go check that out as well, because Nate has so much to offer there. And like you mentioned earlier, really in a way that can be understood and you can kind of actually see this in practice rather than just trying to imagine what it looks like in your head. And then something that you've talked about a lot, I've seen, is about this whole thing of sitting for runners. You know, many of our listeners have like desk jobs. And yeah. You talk about like how your joints kind of get glued together. So do you want to maybe talk about that and how we can work on that and kind of undo the effects of sitting all day?
Yes. So there's this, I remember this sort of analogy of, or not analogy, but like a little like adage for runners and racers. And I can't remember if this comes from the cycling world or running world, but this was like kind of like in the week before your race. Like if you're standing, sit. If you're sitting, lie down. If you're lying down, take a nap, right? Just trying to have you like rest and relax and do less. And in certain respects, it's almost like the opposite from a work standpoint. If you're lying down, sit up. If you're sitting, stand. If you're standing, can you walk around?
Yeah.
You know, like, can you move, you know, a little bit more through the workday? And like, I'm a culprit of this too, guys. Like I work on this, like I'm spending way more time, you know, running a company hunched over a computer, and I feel it in my body, you know, even when I'm trying to live the very things that I talk about. Like I know how hard it is, right? You get stiff. And I think the number one thing is being a little more aware of it. So part of this thing is just don't be afraid to ask some questions. You know, they're standing desks. California obviously is this is obviously a little bit more open here in some respects, but you know, there are a lot of people who are able to get standing desks at work. You know, if you're someone who works on a laptop, you know, what works great as a standing desk is like a box. Like you can just put your computer on a box and there you go. You got a standing desk. Sometimes, you know, if you don't have those opportunities, you're like, well, maybe every hour I can stand up and walk around a little bit. I do a little stretch break. Hey, do I have any phone calls? Could I stand up and take those phone calls standing? You know, there's a lot of opportunities to move around throughout the day. And by the way, standing is not it's not like the position you want to be in all day. Yeah. I don't recommend anyone goes to like 8 hours of standing. It's going to crush you. But having opportunities to sort of change levels is really big.
Just kind of just keep moving from
perspective. Yeah, just giving yourself those moments. I did this for a little while with my group of runners. We did a little posture challenge. And it's annoying in the beginning, but it's effective. It's like set your alarm to beep at you every 10 minutes and use it as a little check in your posture, right? Start upright in the beginning of the 10. You get sucked into your emails, into your world. You know, where are you at the end of the 10 minutes? Are you a little hunched over? Mm-hmm. If you are, you owe me a burpee. And it's a little pattern disrupt. You get up, you move, you get into your body, you're a little more upright, you sit back down and you're like, okay, I'm back.
Yeah.
And then could you bridge that out for longer? Could you do that for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour and build up that way? And that's just sort of a nice way to think about it and to challenge yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, Tina, the other thing I was going to say that I think is just so important is that we need to give ourselves a little transition from either our work or our sleep, our morning to our runs. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's the other crucial piece, because even if I'm standing, my shoulders and hips, it's not like I'm doing like arm circles and swings while I'm at work.
Well, maybe you
know, it's like, maybe you are. those arms, maybe some of you guys are, but you know, chances are like those keyboards don't live overhead, right? They kind of live in that little sphere in front of us. So I really challenge all of you out there to stop and give yourselves like 5 minutes in your run, sidewalk, park, anywhere, 2 minutes of some movement. It could be some leg swings. It could be some arm swings. You could push back into a downward dog. You could do a push-up. You could do some squats or lunges. Like we have a ton of videos on this and I'm happy to share those. But what's powerful is start with what you know or what you think you know and just give yourself 2 minutes to move. And I guarantee you 100% that your run will feel better and more aware afterwards.
So you're saying this, so is this, you know, this is not during the workday. This is once you finish your workday before you head out on your run.
Exactly.
Okay, so
what I'm saying exactly is you start your run, you know, slow jogging is not the ideal warm up for slightly faster jogging. Right?
Okay, talk about that. What would be your ideal warm up routine? Like, let's say someone has done an 8 hour job at work and they've been sitting for 8 hours. Then they, you know, got up, walked around a bit, went to the car, got back in the car, drove to somewhere. What is your suggestion for people to get their body moving again?
Well, I think we've all had that experience when we've done that, you know, our first 15 minutes of running feels like garbage anyway, you know, because we're stiff and tight and like finally we catch our groove. Basically, this little thing will just take your garbage running from 15 minutes to like five, and then you'll just sort of fast track it. So a little bit of running in the beginning is great. A little bit of jogging just to get a little blood flow, get the body temperature up and everything else, but then stop. And what I love to do is, and I can be very precise here just to give you guys something to go off of. Stop and do 10 leg swings forward and backwards just to open up your hips. When you're posting on your leg, you're getting that foot active on the ground. You're developing a little ankle stability, a little hip stability. You have to stand really tall. So you're kind of waking everything up. Go ahead and give me like 10 lunges, where you're just really sliding that rear foot back just to really open up your hips, which is kind of the antithesis of where you sit. You're actually, when you sit, your hip is in flexion, meaning that your knee is flexed forward and you've got that little crease in your hip. When that leg is back behind you, which is where it spends a lot of time when we run, right? Mm-hmm. That's the opposite. That's something called extension, our ability to extend our hip behind. So we need to work on that with some lunges. And then what we could do is push back into a downward dog position. We could pedal out those feet. And I actually like to, and this is where we can, for those of you who don't have time, we can actually sneak in little strength sessions. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and give me 10 push-ups, starting and ending in a downward dog position. And all that's doing is just cueing and priming your shoulders to stabilize, your midline, your core, your hips to fire it and to be on. And then you pop up and then you go finish your run.
Yep. Okay. Love that. Really helpful. And, you know, I've talked about this a lot with the dynamic warm up. And actually, a lot of the things that you mentioned, Nate, are the same that are what I do. And I will put a link in the show notes to the exercises that I do just in case. And Nate, you have so many videos and awesome content on this. So let's talk a bit more about what you offer here. So you do have the 2-week quick start program. So maybe talk a little bit about that first.
Of course. So we put together, and really what we're trying to do at The Run Experience is just build a community of runners and give runners a place to explore their athletic side and develop their inner athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that it's not just coaches that teach runners, but it's really the culture and community we're in that we mm-hmm. just absorb so much without us realizing it. You know, Tina, I don't remember, like, if you sort of show up for your first group run, you know, you're a little scared, you're a little nervous, you're like looking around. And if everyone is standing around with their arms crossed before they go on this, you know, big monster weekend run, you're like, oh, I guess that's just how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then after a while, you become the experienced person and other people are watching you, right? So you're passing that information down. So, mm-hmm. so a lot of times when we learn, it's like, well, we know, yeah, like I've heard strength, I've heard everything else, but if it was really important, the 30 people I just met on the Saturday morning would be all doing it and they're not. So maybe it's not important. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't do it. So I want to change that, or at least I want to draw some attention there and say, hey, if we can sort of flip this around, we can power each other to pass this information on. Mm-hmm. And one of our, you know, ways of doing that is just to empower you guys individually and encourage you to share with our friends. And we created this really awesome 2-week run strength and mobility program for you guys to do it. And I include a little sequence of a warm-up. I talk about all the different movements I like to do, why it's important, how to do it yourself. Have you ever done any nose breathing while running, Tina? Or played with that?
Yeah, I did. I interviewed Dr. Patrick I can't even remember his name now. McKeown, yeah. I think his name was. And he had me doing that. And yeah, it's hard.
It's a trippy thing, right? So yeah. One of the things that's so, at least from my perspective, the thing that I like about it is that it forces people to have a conversation with their diaphragm, to really talk about it. And we sort of realize that this culture of sitting and being a little mushy and slumped over is also a culture of not being very good breathers. Mm-hmm. We breathe into our chest and shoulders and we really struggle. And when we go into a panicked state where we're stressed, where workload is higher, a lot of times we break down because the breathing gets worse and shallower and more panicky. And this is why so many runners, I think, struggle to deal with going faster because they don't have the tool set to embrace that suffering. But the nose breathing, do it outside. You can blow as many snot rockets as you want. It's just a great way to get you breathing into your belly deeper.
Yep.
And in the beginning, you're going to feel like a little panicky, like you're not getting enough oxygen in. Number one, you are. Number two, you can slow down and practice this just like any other muscle. Like you gotta work it and get it firing to really get comfortable there. So we include some challenges like that, which I think we probably get the most comments on that. They're like, oh my God, I did not know how important this was. And what happens too is after people do this for a couple weeks, they're like, Nate, I was been running for 40 minutes and I've just been nose breathing the whole time. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
We're not saying you need to do this all the time. Like when you're racing and you're doing that final kick, like breathe through your mouth, breathe however you need to breathe.
Yeah.
But this is just a little primer for getting us to think about our diaphragm.
Yeah.
And then I include two of my favorite mobility injury prevention exercises. They're both Instagram friendly and Strava friendly, meaning you can do these and update your Instagram and Strava.
Which is important, of course.
Which is important, right? If you don't Strava the run, did the run happen? I think that's the philosophical question of the 21st century.
Yeah, probably is.
One is something called the couch stretch, and the other one is just, you know, being down in the way bottom of a squat and trying to hold and suffer in those positions. Mm-hmm. So yes, be a little tweak program and would love to get you on it and tinkering. And I think it really will complement very beginner runners. Like, man, if I learned this in the very beginning, I would have prevented a whole lot of heartache for you super experienced fast guys out there who could use a little tune up.
Yep. Nope. Great. Thank you for explaining. And Nate is going to set up a page for Running For Real listeners, which is going to be at therunexperience.com/Tina. So make sure you go check that out. And one thing that's funny that I will tell you about the nose breathing thing. So yeah, I did do it for a while. But I got completely put off because in his book, and I actually started working with Dr. Patrick for a little while afterwards because he said, you know, I really think you need some work. So I said, okay. He said he would consult me for free. And I was like, okay. So then he mentioned about, I don't know if you know about like taping your mouth shut while you're sleeping. Because I breathe through my mouth while I while I sleep. And I taped my mouth shut. And one night I woke up in such a panic. Like I thought I was like dying and I probably wasn't breathing, but like I woke up so scared and I was like terrified. I was like, you know, ripped it off. Like, and so it just completely put me off because I was so scared that I was going to like die during this, like, you know, because if you like stub your toe.
What if it was just Patrick like holding his hand over your mouth while you were sleeping?
Yeah. Well, if he could do that from Ireland, I'd be pretty impressed. But
that'd be just as creepy, I think. That's a trip right there.
It was.
You know, I see what's happening there. Like we take like 22,000 breaths a day. Like we take a ton and it's an autonomic thing, meaning that our body knows how to breathe. It just sort of does it. But what we need to do are give ourselves little reminders to improve. Mm-hmm. And I think the goal with any sort of run, drill, or exercise is that you do this and you bring that awareness into the rest of your day, right? So you're thinking about your breathing the rest of your day. Because if you do, let's say you do your nose breathing and you do it for a mile and you do it for, say, 10 minutes one time a week, you know, that's 1 hour of 167, right? Like what's going to win? The 167 is going to win all the time. And that's why the sitting and the standing throughout your day is so important as an athlete, because let's be honest, we all want that rockin' race photo at the end. And most of us, when we look at a race photo, it's like, man, I look like that. And it's like, yeah, you do. And the reason why is because if someone were to take your race photo of you, you know, rocking emails at 3 p.m. when you've been up all day, like you're probably in the same position, right? So our body is a precision machine in that it's going to precisely do what we tell it to do all day long, right? So if we want to change the outputs we care about, like our running and our performance, we need to change the inputs, what we tell it to do on all those other moments. I don't know if I'm inspired to try the tape on my mouth.
You should try it and then let us know how it goes.
That sounds so creepy and hard.
It was kind of scary, but it was like, you know, if you stub your toe in the middle of the night, it feels so much more painful in the night because you're just kind of a bit out of it. but like, yeah, it was terrifying. So I need to get back to that because I did find it helpful. And other than my nose running and kind of that burning sensation in your nose for a while,
In the winter. I think it's hard in the winter. You know, when everyone is a little bit more congested, which might be a whole nother conversation on health and wellness and inflammation, you know. There's something there.
No, this is great. And okay, so we are going to get on to the Running for Real 4 here. So I would like to start. Do you have a unique nutrition tip you would like to share with us?
Unique nutrition tip. I saw these questions before I had these great things. You're like, I prepared you, Nate.
Making me look bad here.
To have these things. Does it have to be just running or could it be other non-nutrition things? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. If you're like cooking the night before, like make double of everything, invest in some good glass Tupperware and you got lunch the next day.
Yes. Steve and I do that exact thing. So great. That's a great tip. Definitely.
All right. I don't know how unique that is, but I think that's a good one.
I think it's something to keep in mind for sure. Mm-hmm. And then what about a running for real moment where you can, you know, show us that you are human or something funny or bad that happened to you that runners will understand?
So I had this moment and I was actually thinking about it. And this is the moment I should talk about because it was probably the first thing that popped in my head when I read that question. And I was like, oh man, maybe this is sort of the thing. This was back in 2004 and, I was, you know, getting into running at the time, but I was traveling around, South Africa and we were on this area called the Wild Coast, which is off the Indian Ocean. It's south of a city called Durban, which is like further up the coast. And we were just like along this, like these beautiful, like kind of like grass covered, little like hills that basically turned into cliffs and dropped right to the ocean. So basically all you saw was like this, like swelling grass hills and this beautiful Pacific Ocean. And we were doing this hike and, I don't know why, but it was like this really soft grass trail. It was like cool. It was comfortable. So we just like took our shoes off and we were hiking. And then I was with two of my friends and we were just like kind of in this like, we just like stopped talking, but we were like together. Is like one of those things where it's like you're not communicating, you're not talking, mm-hmm. but we're just sort of like there. Like we're sort of like the energy was like, we're all here right now. And literally my two other friends who were not runners at all, just started to run. Mm. And then we just ran and we ran like 5 miles back barefoot in the grass. And this was like before we were like thinking about barefoot running as a thing. Like this was like my awareness in running was like, I was like, you know, 10 months in, but we just did this. And it was just, it's something I still remember. And it was just this coolest thing. And it's just like two of your buddies and you're just like ripping around the single track. It was like this perfect trail. Like there was no rocks to step on. Like it felt amazing. It was ocean. We were these young American students living in this cool country. We just had this experience. It was so awesome. And I sort of think about that every once in a while as just, man, if I think about like pure running experience, like for me, that is it.
Have you ever discussed it with them, or is it one of those things that just kind of happened and it's like, you know, kind of like, let's not discuss that day.
Yeah, the things got a little weird. Let's not talk about that. You know, so one of the guys who did that run with me, he actually lives in San Francisco. He and his wife moved out and I've known him now for, I don't know, like 12 or 14 years or anything. I should ask him see if he remembers. That's a good call. I see him every once in a while.
Maybe you dreamed it.
Exactly. Yeah. It was one of those things. Maybe I had like tape over my mouth. And I was starved of oxygen and I went to this crazy state in my dream.
Maybe it was you that had the tape on your mouth, not me. Yeah, that's funny. All right. And then a high moment, or was that your high moment?
That was a high moment, but you know, I've got others. So the last question is just a high moment while running?
Like, yeah. What a moment that meant a lot to you as a runner.
So I would probably say, running it was in an Ironman triathlon. Mm-hmm. And it was like a two loop course on the run. And so it was so mean because you basically go past the finish line.
Yeah, I've done races like that.
And where your family is, and then you go out again and you're just like leaving. You're like, I'm just going away. And it's like you're leaving like miles like 13 to 18, right, where things start to get bad. Mm-hmm. But then you come back and the course was like you went like six blocks through the town. And as you got closer to the finish line, the crowds got bigger and you knew your family was there. And I was 23 and it was my first Ironman triathlon, which was for me this impossible thing. I'd been exercising for like 10 hours and you're just so stupid tired. Like, I like an Ironman to focus, to be competitive. It's like, you have to stare at this little black dot on the wall. And as soon as you like the black dot's not that interesting. So as soon as you look at something else, like you slow down
or you hurt
something else, you're like, I got to go back to the dot. Like I've been staring at this dot for 10 hours and just, I wasn't expecting to be as emotional as I was when I hit the finish. Like, when you get later on and you've raced a bunch, like you've had some great marathons, but after a while you don't have that feeling of overwhelm all the time. Like, I did the marathon. Like I was a little slower. You know what I mean? Like I got this, like it wasn't my best day. You kind of like take for granted the fitness and the hard work that it takes to get there. And I just remember in that Ironman, that was just such a special thing because it was like the first time I did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just this amazing thing. And I just like soaked it up. I was like high-fiving people going down the side. I probably, I probably could have gone 30 seconds faster at the end if I had, you know, run a little more direct route, but I just soaked it in. And I was just,
such a cool moment. Definitely. And definitely an accomplishment for sure. And then finally, the last question, what do you tell yourself when you're standing on the start line?
I say relax fast.
I like that. Cool. That's a good one.
What I always say, right? I just say stay relaxed, go fast. And.
So on this show, I ask people, we are trying to get the R4R power pose to be a thing. So will you, Nate, take a picture or get someone to take a picture of you next time you were on the start line or about to start a workout or something, of you in a power pose, and use the hashtag R4R power pose and send it to us? Yeah.
You definitely will.
Cool. Okay. So if people want to find you, as I mentioned, it will be at tinamuir.com/episode6. You do also have an app, so you can tell us a little bit about that and then where else people can find you in the future.
Yeah. So the best place to kind of interact with us, the Run Experience, is to download our awesome run training app. You could look us up just in your app store, just the Run Experience. It'll pop up. And you can also go to the link, just therunexperience.com/app, A-P-P. Okay. And that will get you, where you need to go for that. And then, yeah, follow us on YouTube and on Facebook. I'm actually trying a little social experiment, Tina. I'm not really on Instagram or Twitter right now.
Ooh.
Yeah. I just tried to like kind of turn it off because I needed to minimize the number of channels that people were getting at me.
Yep.
And it was like another thing to manage. And, you know, for those where it brings you lots of joy and fulfillment, like all the power to you. What I wanted to do was just like, I just wanted to like kind of turn this off and just sort of see what happened and see if I'd miss it. Of course, I can always turn it back on. I haven't missed it yet.
Well, good for you. I'm glad you did that. And actually, that means you can put more attention into the ones that matter for you, which, by the way, we have not discussed yet. And we're going to do it live on the air.
Nate
decided you didn't select this personally, but while I was at home a few weeks ago, I was sitting there with my mom on the couch and she's on Facebook and she goes, Tina, who is this? And she shows me a picture of Nate talking to her from one of the Run Experience. It was a Run Experience video and it had come up as a sponsored post. And I was like, and I texted you at the time, like, hey, because my mom doesn't run, has never run. And so it was so funny that like of all the things that came up on her Facebook, you were the one. So I want to tell you publicly, stop chasing after my mom to bring her onto your program, because it's a lost cause. I'm telling you that right now. My mom is not a runner.
I mean, there's only one way we can really fix this, and tell your mom to, you know, not be so difficult, and then, you know, this won't be an issue, right? Just...
Yeah. All right, I'll tell her that you said she needs to run, and all the years of me telling her isn't going to go in, but maybe you'll get her to work. But it was just so funny.
The straw that broke the camel's back.
There you go, exactly. Well, Nate, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been a ton of fun, and I hope you guys have enjoyed it at home, and I look forward to hearing what people think of the Run Experience moving forward.
Thanks so much, Tina. That was awesome.
I don't know about you guys, but my face kind of hurt after that episode from laughing so much. So make sure you go back and check out that video of Nate breakdancing. I mean, breakdancing just sounds somewhat like so much fun. I'm more of a Just Dance kind of girl, but I can imagine breakdancing would be so much fun if you were good at it. Now, I'm going to ask you, have you left a rating or review yet for the Running For Real podcast? The best way you can help me if you are enjoying these episodes is to leave me a rating or review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. And if you do that and you email me podcast@tinamuir.com a screenshot of your review, then you will automatically, I will enter you into a giveaway that's going to be you could be one of five winners who win either a half marathon or a marathon training program from my husband and coach, Steve. So many of you have asked me over the years about him coaching or about me coaching. And I've always said that, you know, I didn't really want to go the coaching route right now. And Steve is really the genius behind my improvements as a runner. So he has created programs and they will be on my site soon for purchase. But if you win this, not only are you going to get it free, but you will get it way before everyone else. So I would say that's quite a prize. I know I might be a little bit biased, but I think it is a pretty good deal and I hope you will enter to win. So you can find out more information about that at tinamuir.com/marathon giveaway. Or you can also check out the show notes for this page at tinamuir.com/episode6. You have until May 5th to enter. That's 1 week from today if you are listening to this the day it goes live. And if you are a bit confused on how to leave a review or a rating, if you go to either of those web pages, you will be able to see there is a video on there of showing you exactly how to do it. So next week, we will be having another sports psychologist on the show, and he gave so much good advice and good mental running tips that I had a really hard time picking which quotes to use on the show notes, as there was just so much good stuff, and I could have, you know, written a huge blog post just in his quotes alone. So this episode with Dr. Brett McCabe goes live next Friday. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, so it goes right to your phone or tablet, I guess, automatically. And if you don't know how to subscribe, again, there is a video showing you how to do that at tinamuir.com/episode6. So I hope you have a great week, and I will see you next Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.